Save big money and start your spring project with help from Menards. We offer a huge selection of Bonnie plants, veggies, and herbs to plant at home and grow yourself. Right now, all Bonnie 4.5-inch vegetable and herbs are on sale through May 17th. Head to the Menards Garden Center to get your garden growing. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big money at Menards.
Vasquez beaten away by Buffon. And then Ronaldo! Oh! What a goal by Cristiano Ronaldo!
Messi to the near.
Ramel Kiyoko now. Here's a Hunter. He'll whip it in back to the far post. Elise! Albert Elise! La Punta Rica! It's a Honduran connection!
This is Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN975.com.
Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm. DaspitLaw.com. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, welcome back to the show over on Facebook Soccer Matters. We put the question out there, how are you handling the social distancing at home? How you're getting your soccer football fix? Brandon Campbell comes in with his son, that his son's getting touches in. They watched the Dynamo Championship replay from 2006 and reading some Borussia Dortmund articles and updates. By the way, Borussia Dortmund, I think, is training. Has been training and doing some social distancing while they're training, believe it or not. We'll talk a little bit about that a little bit later on. On another note here, the show is presented by John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm. And now it's time to switch gears. Let's talk a little NWSL, former Texas A&M Aggie soccer star, now with the Houston Dash. Shea Groom joins us now. Shea, thank you very much for coming on the show.
Yeah, thanks, Glenn, for having me.
All right, so what are we watching? Tiger King, the English game? What are you watching on Netflix or TV?
Well, I was late to the party and just finished up Making a Murderer, so I've taken a break from Netflix after watching that and trying to wrap my head around it still. So,
what do you recommend for those out there who are getting a little bit into Netflix like me?
Ooh. Well, I'm a big Ozark fan because I'm from Missouri, so they have new episodes of Ozark out there. Making a Murderer was really good. Interesting, for sure. So,
yeah, I heard Ozark
trying not to spend
too.
Too much time on Netflix, though.
Yeah, no, I get it. All right, so Liberty, Missouri. Obviously, Missouri is a great soccer state. What was it like growing up out there, and who was your first influence in the game, Shay?
Yeah, I loved growing up in Kansas City. Spent a lot of time on the Kansas side, but I went to a great high school, definitely soccer city, and absolutely loved growing up there. Growing up, I watched a little bit of the U.S. Women's National Team, and I think the first person that really inspired me was Lauren Holliday, and she was kind of one of the first. I think I went down the roster, and she was like the only kid from the Midwest at the time. And so it kind of like birthed that dream for me that someone, that lived in a state close to mine, could do something like that. And then it kind of came full circle when I became her teammate, on FC Kansas City, my rookie year. So obviously getting to play with somebody who inspired me from the get-go was kind of surreal.
Talking to Shea Groom, Houston Dash, 2 years at FC Kansas City, 2015 to 2017. Did you ever get to tell her that story?
I did, yeah. She became kind of like a mentor, definitely took me under her wing that first year. And she ultimately retired after the championship year in 2015. Definitely got to kind of tell her a little bit about it. But she was awesome. She is awesome.
I called that NWSL final. She was a star of that final. That was an amazing final.
Oh, insane. Yeah,
amazing. 2015 to 2017, FC Kansas City. All right, things change a little bit. Sky Blue, which we knew at that time was struggling a lot. What was that like, and what was learned there?
Yeah, definitely. I think any hard situation that you go through prepares you, and I think that situation prepared me a lot more as a person moving forward and as a soccer player. And, you know, I really enjoyed my time there. A lot of people will look at our record and, you know, say we were the worst team ever and blah, blah, blah. But if you really go back to those games, like, we fought in a lot of games and got close. And it was unlucky a few times. But definitely not having experienced the camaraderie and just the ability to wake up every day and, you know, go through something difficult, but you're going through it with the people that you care about. So it was still a great experience and something that I will carry with me forever.
Talking to Shea Groom here. Yeah, because up to that point, you're not used to losing. You're playing with G. Guerrero, my buddy up at Texas A&M. You're winning almost every game there. You go to FC Kansas City, you're winning. All of a sudden, you learn about this thing called losing. You know, how do you make losing your friend? And, you know, I know the hardcore are going to say you never do, but there is something to learn always. And like you said, there's always good players on teams that may not have good records.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, I think that was something that we all learned about ourselves is that, you know, I think we're a lot tougher than we give ourselves credit for. Because, you know, it's hard to wake up after, you know, on a Sunday or a Monday after another loss, you know, number 14, 15 in the L column, and still have to go to training, motivate yourself, do all the right things, even though you know your playoffs.
Oh, I think we may have just lost. Yeah. Okay, so we're hoping to get Shea back. So Shea plays at Sky Blue, and then obviously, to my point, Reign FC picks her up. She plays at Reign FC and now picked up by the Dash, 14 appearances for Reign FC and 2 goals. But she is a very technical player. She was the SEC Offensive Player of the Year prior to getting drafted and going to FC Kansas City. So she's had quite the career. And again, what I like about Shea Groom is simply the fact that she doesn't fit the prototype of, you know, she doesn't look like Carly Lloyd. She's not big. She's not muscular. She's slight. She's technical. She's quick. And by the way, in the NWSL, she made the second team All-Star team in 2016. So it's a player that I think, if used properly, and that's going to be the challenge for James Clarkson, could really reap some interesting benefits for the Houston Dash and make it a very interesting team as well. So we're waiting for Shea Groom to come back on the show. I did mention something about DeMarcus Beasley. Okay, so we got Shea back. Shea, thank you. We got you back. So I think you were just finishing up on Sky Blue and learning, you know, to handle losing.
Yeah, I think just learning to persevere and wake up and still want to chase your dream. I think in those difficult times and some of the worst moments of your life, you really figure out what you're made of. And I think that was the kind of situation for me in the way that I took it walking away.
Is it important for youth? Because look, you did the whole youth soccer thing. You did the college thing. You know, you've ascended in the American game, the women's game, which is comparable to any in the world. Okay, it's the number one team at the national team level, but our system, certainly the college system, is strong. The youth system is strong. Do you talk to young kids ever about, you know, that disappointment as a part of player development? Because, you know, the amount of videos and on camera, you know, I mean, I see my nephew. It's like every other day. There's something, you know, I'm worried. Honestly, it's a little over the top sometimes. So, you know, how do we prepare young players for losing and disappointment?
Yeah, I mean, I try to give as many experiences as I can. I think young players will look at pros and players that have found a lot of success and just think that, you know, their journey was kind of paved for them. But I think any player that you ask has been cut by a coach or, you know, had that sense of loss and that sense of, you know, that situation where they did have to persevere. And that's something I've always encouraged kids to almost like seek out, you know, whether, you know, getting out of your comfort zone, I always think pushes you kind of in those situations where failure is a possibility. And I think that's where you turn the corner and you figure out what, you know, kind of what you're made from. My story was I was competing to try to be on the U-17 women's national teams, go to a World Cup, and got told by a coach at the end of my camp evaluation that I was the worst player he ever called into camp. And it was a terrible moment, terrible feeling for me, but I, you know, I'm 27 years old now, and I'm still thinking about that moment 10, 11 years ago, where someone told me I wasn't good enough, and you prove every single day afterwards, you know, I am, and I was one of the ones that made it out, and some of the girls that are on that team don't play soccer anymore. So I think, yeah, failure in a way is kind of a stepping stone to success, and always try to communicate that to the players, young players that are going through that, and, you know, a lot of girls that feel they're too small to play the game or, you know, struggle with some other things. So definitely try to encourage the younger crowd in that sense.
I think you are a tremendous representation to youth soccer players, and I'll tell you why. Because you're not the biggest, you're not the strongest, you're the quickest, you're the smartest, you're technically proficient. And I hope I'm not stepping out of line saying this, but your prototype is very different, and I want to see your prototype more in the NWSL, as opposed to just strictly the power and the strength game, and we are seeing that, there's no question, but you really are the prototype for that. So where did all the technical acumen come from? Who pushed it? And when did you realize being technically superior to people and smarter and quicker thinking than people was your weapon?
You know, I was the athletic kid, the fast kid, and I relied on that for a lot of my career. I think I didn't really know. You know, I grew up in a household. My dad's a high school football coach and a college basketball referee. So it wasn't like I grew up watching soccer and really understanding the game or even the technical aspects. You know, I just happened to be a really good athlete, and it transferred the best, I think, on a soccer field. And once I got to college, I realized, you know, I think that I could kind of take this to another level. And that's just kind of where the simple stuff began. You know, it wasn't anything crazy that I was doing, but, you know, juggling or we had this wall out in the back at A&M, and I just started going there and getting thousands of passes off this wall pretty late in my college career, I think junior or my senior year, because I wanted to win a national championship, because that's ultimately why I had chosen Texas A&M was, you know, they're right there. They've, you know, had this incredible NCAA run. They get to the Elite Eight, and they can't get to the Final Four. Like, this is, you know, this is what I want to come here to do. I want to be the first, and I want to go to a program that's already done it before. And so that's where I think it started initially, and then I decided pretty late that I wanted to be a pro. I decided I wanted to finish school early and really only had a full year left, including a summer. So, you know, did all that, got to the pro level, and then I was like, wow, this is another level, like, you got to step it up. And I broke my foot my rookie year. So I missed basically the back half of the season, made it back to play, you know, seconds in that championship game in 2015. But after that year, I had, you know, just recovered from the foot injury. And I would love to know how many hours I logged that off season in Richmond, Virginia. And that's what I always tell kids. You know, you take this as far as you want to. I was out there with a headlight. at night, before the sun came up, juggling, using simple cone drills that you can find on YouTube, just trying to get thousands of touches on the ball any way that I could to feel so comfortable with the ball that I wouldn't have to worry about the technical side, and then I could really flourish on the tactical side.
Inspirational, and it's when people aren't watching you is when players are made. I don't think there's any question to that, and it's not about the YouTube video you're putting it up. It's about all that other stuff that you're doing to get to the next level. So at what point did you feel your technical game expanding, and did that make the game more interesting to you? Because, look, now I'm able to do some different things. I'm being looked upon differently by an opponent. Do you kind of remember a time period when that happened, once you made the commitment to be a better technical player?
Yeah, I think that, you know, that first year was fun. The World Cup happened. I scored a lot of goals. And then, you know, I happened to break my foot kind of at the wrong time right before those World Cup players came back. So, you know, again, missed a large chunk of the season. But after that rookie year, we kind of had a unique situation in FC Kansas City. And a lot of players retired. You know, Lauren retired. Amy Rodriguez was having a baby. Amy LaPelvet retired. Leanne Robinson. You know, we had a number of players. Our team looked drastically different. Sid LaRue was coming onto the team. So I had this unique opportunity to get a lot of playing time in 2016. And we didn't have a nine at the time. So, and I was lucky enough to be coached by Vladko, obviously now U.S. Women's National Team coach. And I think that 2016 year was big for me. I learned, you know, I had this technical foundation now. How could I use it to score goals and be a true nine, which I hadn't really had the opportunity to do. And, you know, just learning from him and Milan, who's now the assistant coach, you know, they would work with me every single day. Like, how are we going to make you the best nine in the league? Like, you're tiny. No one's going to think that you're a good nine because you're, you know, not big and strong, you know, kind of what we talked about. But just trying to kind of unlock the game in an unconventional way. So I watched a lot of Jamie Vardy. They told me, you know, I want you to make 100 runs and be so annoying that no one wants to track you as a defender. Mm-hmm. And I think that's kind of the turning point for me where I learned to be a student of the game. And it's not just about sitting down and watching soccer games in full. You know, that's definitely, there's benefits there. But for me, it was studying the game in the sense, okay, I'm going to watch 3 full NWSL games and watch the tendencies of the opponent that I'm going to go up against. And just watch what these outside backs are doing, watch what these center backs were doing. Where can I pick apart the game and kind of unlock the game in a sense? Because I don't play the nine in a conventional way. So I think that was kind of the turning point for me where it all came together. You know, how do I use my athleticism, my technical ability, and now this newfound tactical ability to be able to study the game and understand where I can make the greatest impact.
So this movement, Shay, had to be purposeful. It had to be in different areas. You'd study the opposing center backs. How much of mixing your runs up is important as well? In other words, yeah, you make your first 2 or 3 runs back to the ball and, you know, get a center back to think that that's kind of what the routine is going to be, and then all of a sudden spin off them and get behind. I mean, how much of some of your runs, which you're never going to get the ball all the time, tell young players this, so many of your runs set up things for other people, create space for other people. How many of your runs were to kind of set the tone for things to come potentially?
Yeah, again, I think one of my goals in every game was kind of just to be a gnat to the other team. So a lot of time that was creating space for other players. It was always moving, you know, not kind of being that traditional stand-up forward who tries to get the ball to their feet, lay it off, and, you know, spin out type of thing. So it was definitely something that I learned. And then, obviously, like, runs inside the box. I watched a lot of film on A-Rod, because I think she does an incredible job of being able to lose defenders in a tight space and be able to set herself up for a goal-scoring opportunity. So, and that's what I've learned definitely playing on the forward line is how can you be creative without the ball? And, you know, that's not necessarily always taught at the youth level. So I think with the evolution of my game, it's just been a constant building block, and that's why it's been so fun to be a pro. It's just being able to, you know, I feel like a kid again. Like, I feel like I'm just starting my career every year that I come into the NWSL. So,
Shay, thank you so much for coming on. We're on a hard break, but this has been a great interview, a very insightful one, very inspiring. We'll get you back on again. We'll keep this going because there's a lot more we could have talked about. But thank you so much for coming on tonight. That was a great interview. Thank you.
Awesome. Thanks, Glenn.
All right, Shay Groom, Texas A&M Aggie. She also is now a member of the Houston Dash. You're going to be able to watch her eventually once we get through this coronavirus. All right, we're taking a break here. Wash your hands, social distance, stay positive. We're going to get through this thing. We'll take a break. We got more to come, including an MLS icon next.
listening to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, welcome back to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5. Quick word here from my friends at Advantage BMW. I've leased and owned from Advantage over the years. They are great supporters of soccer. Go down there, talk to Justin. They can take you through the whole process. They'll cover you with sales, service, finance. It can be done so easy. You can get that hometown advantage at Advantage BMW Midtown. AdvantageBMWHouston.com. Again, go see Justin. I got an X5. I love it. I throw the bike in the back. And they are big supporters of soccer. We've done a couple of live shows down there as well. Quick quote here before we get to our next guest, who is an icon in Major League Soccer. Harry Kane saying this, quote, "I've always said if I don't feel we're progressing as a team or going in the right direction, then I'm not someone to just stay there for the sake of it." That's Harry Kane refusing to rule out a move. How much of this do you think has to do with Jose Mourinho or lack of investment from Daniel Levy, who, by the way, is going to take government money while laying people off at Spurs? It's kind of sad. That's brutal. Newcastle's doing that as well. We're going to talk a little bit more about that later in the show. But right now, we're going to go to a guy that I've known a long time, have a lot of respect for, not only a college coach, but 24 years. He was a commentator for the Columbus Crew. He is an icon. He started in 96 with them, has had numerous partners on the air. He's seen it all. So our continuation of talking to some of the MLS commentators who began in 96 continues. Columbus Crew's Dwight Burgess. Dwight, thank you very much for coming on.
Glenn, as always, my pleasure. Thanks for reaching out.
Yeah, and we've had you've been on my show a number of times over the years, especially ahead of Carew games and stuff in the past. So, let's just first get into what you're doing right now under this whole situation that we're all going through, this crisis with the coronavirus. How are you sort of setting your days up, and what are you doing? Because I want my listeners to know you're also a college soccer coach.
Yeah, well, you know, and that's really been the challenge. We were set to begin our spring season on March 16th. Obviously, that's not happened, and our university specifically, like many in this part of the country, has already announced that classes will be done remotely for the remainder of this semester. So we're going to lose our entire spring season, which is secondary to far more important things, of course. But it has given me lots of hours to fill, no games to watch. But my wife's loving it, as you can well imagine. I mean, it's 24/7 with the love of my life. So what else can I say?
Yeah, and by the way, Dwight is the coach at Wittenberg University. He's with the Tigers. He's been there since the fall of 2016. Well, I was saying to myself, look, I mean, it's more opportunity for people to spend time with their families, their spouses, their wives, their significant others, and or their dogs, like in my case, unfortunately.
Yeah.
I should have a significant other right now, I think, but I don't. So,
I tried a dog can count.
I'm under the watchful eye of a home-producing dog right now. Just sitting here staring at me, which is kind of weird.
Yeah.
But anyway, I want to get you into the Columbus Crew. You know, the whole start of it at Ohio State, just take me back to 96 and the start of the Crew and you being their commentator.
All right, fair enough. Well, you know, it was such an interesting time. Hosting the 94 World Cup was the impetus for the league, as you well know. By the fifth year, many wondered if the league was even going to survive. So it's been an amazing 24 years to think now we have NFL owners lining up to try and get franchises and on our way to 30 teams. But, you know, in Columbus, yeah, the games started the first couple of seasons played in the Shoe. Very, very narrow because there was a track at that time. So it was very much of a bandbox type facility, but they'd only open the lower bowl, and they filled it up more than once, about 26,000, created a nice atmosphere. But a much different time with the players as well, and the personal relationships, partly through my role with, you know, the first year guys like Brian McBride and Brian Bliss and Yanish Mahalik and, you know, and so on. And it was just a different world, and people ask questions about it, and it's hard to kind of explain all the differences. But one of the things I think you, Dave Johnson, J.P. Della Camera, when we all talking with each other, we wonder a little bit here in the 25th season, how much connection is there to those early days? Do people remember what D.C. United meant to this league, during that era? So anytime we've had an opportunity to sort of reminisce, we've always tried to take advantage of it. But a different time, I remember opening game in April of 96, and Columbus opened with United, who would go on and win the cup, but Columbus won the game 4-0. And Timo Lukowski, who was the original head coach, was actually wearing his U.S. national team jacket on the bench, wasn't even wearing crew apparel or anything black and gold. So you certainly wouldn't see that today. Everybody's in these European suits.
Yeah, no question. We're talking to Dwight Burgess, commentator, Columbus Crew. Those three names you whipped off were great names. Giannis Mihalik, Brian McBride, these are great names. The accessibility back then was wonderful with these players because I still felt that, to a large degree, these guys still got the part that was, hey, we still are salespeople.
Yep, 100%. It's near impossible to explain what it was like. I think when what is now known as Monterey Stadium, when Crew Stadium opened, it became a regular thing that the Thursday practice ahead of a Saturday game was in the stadium. The stadium was open, and you'd get a few hundred people there. There were different activities that would take place, and there was direct connection between the players and the fans, the supporters. And I think, Glenn, it's one of the things that's been lost a little bit in these recent years. And I understand professional sports and the distance and guys getting compensated for their time. And we think we all understand the evolution of a professional league. But I do think that there were some connections that have faded over the last 2.5 decades. And for me personally, it's been disappointing to see that piece of it.
All right. I'm going to whip off a couple names. I want you to just, these are legendary players with the Crew, and I want to get a couple of sentences on them. Let's start with Jeff Cunningham, who scored just a ton of goals.
Jeff Cunningham's mercurial. You run into him anywhere, he was your best friend, legitimately so. Very, very outgoing, but very, very typical goal scorer. He also could be moody, and there were stretches of games where he wasn't as interested as playing at other times, but you lived through some of that frustration because you knew when he was on that he was going to help you, and he loved wearing the badge, and he loved playing for the players.
Guillermo Barros-Schelotto. Now, when that happened and he ended up in Ohio in the Midwest, we were used to big-name players coming to either Los Angeles or New York or places like that. Tell me about the uniqueness of him coming to Ohio and kind of some of your interactions with him.
Sure, and one of the things that was fascinating about that is when the rumors first started circulating and became increasingly serious, there was a lot of chatter on the much younger social media pages about how there's no way, he was considered the number two to Maradona in Argentina at the time, and you're never going to get him to come to Columbus. And then he shows up, and, he might as well be your gym teacher, right? He's about 5'8 and 145 pounds. But just a very open personality, smiled all the time, treated everybody the same, was really respected highly for that. But just played at a different level, saw things that other people didn't see, saw three and four moves ahead when most are seeing maybe two moves ahead. But a perfect fit for a city like Columbus where he could go out and would be noticed, but people were always very respectful of him. He came in with Gino Padula, and the two of them started an academy in Columbus. Gino remains and has remained in Columbus and now has taken over running that as Guillermo has pursued his coaching career. But you can't say a bad word about him. He's a guy that treated everybody with respect, treated everybody the same, and showed up and delivered a championship.
How much adjusting did he do? And, I mean, obviously, come on, this is a guy coming from Boca Juniors, teams of this this caliber. How much adjusting and did he have to do based on everybody around him? Because he knows he's being brought there to be the guy to run the show.
Right.
But he also probably has to change his expectation level around a lot of things.
He did, Glenn, and you're spot on. And that's the thing. From day one, he never treated anybody differently. He knew that he had to elevate those around him, and they were going to have to learn to have respect and confidence in him. but it was also, you look at the guys on there, you know, Alejandro Moreno in front of them, and you had Frankie Hadick. He was surrounded by guys that were really, and these were Siggy's guys, and they were really willing to allow him to do what he did. So that was the first part, was developing the connection. And once they all really got comfortable and he saw that this is a team that really was going to follow his lead, you know, then the things on the field and the way that he orchestrated it. But he was always a team guy, always found that extra pass, and had a group of guys that were willing to follow him.
Talking to legendary crew commentator, legendary Major League Soccer commentator, Dwight Burgess, talking about the Columbus Crew. He spent 24 years there calling games. Let's talk about Frankie. Free spirit, maybe didn't totally epitomize Columbus, Ohio, but man, did the people love him.
Socially, he did not epitomize Columbus, Ohio. There's no question about that.
Frankie hated
on the field, and you'll remember this. This is one of the things that was kind of lost over the years, but the original moniker for Columbus was America's Hardest Working Team. And while that was sort of a marketing thing initially, it really became to embody that. When you think about guys like Mike Clark and Brian Mazenoff, we mentioned Janosch Mihalik and Brian Bliss. I mean, they were not the most skilled collection of players, but they had talent, they had attitude, they had work rate. And Frankie personified that, as we all know, because the guy's just 90 minutes up and down the flank, never causes any problems. But, yes, he brought a different off-field perspective to Columbus, but, a fan favorite to this day.
Talking to Dwight Burgess, 24 years as a commentator in Major League Soccer, head soccer coach at Wittenberg University. Are you going to miss the call of the game? Because, I mean, I'm missing it right now.
Yeah.
I'm feeling it. You going to miss the call of the game?
Yeah, on a professional level, it's the most difficult decision I've ever made. And it was not a choice that I really had to make. You know, 2 years ago, in fact, May 1 of 18, I had a stroke. As you know, and those on the outside who don't necessarily know, but even 24 years doing the crew games, it was never a full-time job. So I had a quote-unquote regular job during the week and then was working 35, 40 weekends per year. There was travel involved. And then when the health incident occurred 2 years ago, the doctors were really big on you're going to need to slow down. You know, these are your options. So we went through the balance of 18, went through 19, and then I sat down with the organization at the end of the 2019 season. And ultimately everybody decided that under the circumstances, you know, this was probably the right thing at the right time, but I stay very connected to the organization. Certainly haven't closed any doors. But from a health standpoint, particularly the summer leading into the college season, which, of course, begins mid-August, I have a lot of downtime, and I'm learning how to live with the downtime. So it's one thing to say, hey, you know what, you've had this great career, and I've been so blessed, but it's time to move on. But this wasn't necessarily something that I was looking to do. So it has been an adjustment, and it has been odd those first couple of weeks when they did play to watch games but to not be broadcasting them. I'd be lying if I said I didn't miss part of it, but you make decisions for bigger reasons, and I'm a son, and I'm a brother, and I'm a husband, and I'm a father, and those people deserve to have me around as long as possible, and so I made a decision that I had to make, and as busy as it is in the fall with the college season, from mid-August into, between Thanksgiving, Christmas, whenever the season may end, that's a very busy time. But then I got 8 months where it's very low-key, it's very relaxed. And we're hoping that this, over a stretch of time will really help me fully recover from what I went through.
Has it been tough learning to be still?
Very much so, because, it's, When you're working multiple jobs, you're just on the go. And I can remember even when I had a day off, it was such a wonderful thing to have because I just didn't have to do anything. But you knew the next day you were going to be back in it. You know, you got your Monday through Friday, and then you've got your Saturday. We did a weekly radio show playing the away games. So it has been very different to go, particularly right now, without spring practice, without being on campus where I really don't have anything to do. That has been challenging. And I think it's a challenge that we're all going through. And I'm still sort of finding my way, but started doing a podcast, looking at maybe doing a book on my experiences over 24 years, not necessarily the games and the results as much as being locked out of my booth at halftime, the old Mile High Stadium, it was so cool. You remember being there, right? And it was all metal frames and metal doors. And I went to the restroom at halftime during a commercial break. This was a radio broadcast. And I came back and the door had frozen shut. So I had to go find an open booth and then shinny on the outside to get back and climbed in the window of my booth. Stuff like that.
All right, hold on to that thought because I want to hold you over into the next segment if that's possible. Is that okay, Dwight?
Sure. No,
all right, 100%. Let's continue this because this is a lot of fun. We'll get into a couple of fun commentator stories, and then I want to get your advice to young aspiring commentators because I asked Dave Johnson the same thing. So we'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll have more with Dwight Burgess, 24 years a commentator with the Columbus Crew, head coach at Wittenberg University. We'll take a break. We'll come back with more.
G'day, Sam Windsor from the Houston Sabercats here. Rugby's simple. Make tackles, hit rucks, score tries. Almost as simple as using the app. Stream ESPN 97.5 from anywhere, even down under.
No sleep till!
You're listening to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, big shout-out to Advantage BMW and Justin. They are in Midtown. You go to Advantage BMW Midtown, they're going to take you through the process. Advantage BMW, they're going to cover you with sales, service, finance. It can be done very easy. You'll get that hometown advantage down there with Justin. So get down there, Advantage BMW Midtown. That's where I get my cars. All right. Also, John Daspit, the Daspit Law Firm. He's our presenting sponsor. A big thank you to John and his firm. Also, presenting sponsor of our show in Austin as well, which will air tomorrow night at 7 o'clock. That's a little bit of a change. So our Austin show tomorrow night at 7 o'clock. Daspit Law Firm, 713-322-HURT. They're bilingual. DaspitLaw.com. You get in an accident, you need a personal injury attorney. It is the Daspit Law Firm. Get the representation you need, DaspitLaw.com. Thank you, John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm, for getting us on the air. As we come back with more with Dwight Burgess, 24 years, commentator in Major League Soccer. He's also the coach at Wittenberg University, was an accomplished player as well. As I bring you back, Dwight, I guess the first thing I'm going to say to you is give me another one of those fun stories, commentator stories that we all have about incidents or moments or things that have happened.
Sure. A couple of things come to mind back in the early days. So when DC United was still playing at RFK in that inaugural season, there was very limited television around the league, as you know. But the radio booth was at that time what was the film booth for the Washington Redskins. And it was all the way at the very top of the stadium. Now, understand, they didn't open the upper level of the stadium. So you get all the way up there, and I mean, you're really on your own and trying to get some measure of atmosphere when you're so far away from the crowd. So that was always a bit of an adventure. Went out to the Rose Bowl.
How about Giants Stadium, too? That was way up in the stratosphere.
Oh,
Giants
Stadium, Mike. Yeah, you're in the flight pattern at that point.
Yeah, I remember that as being a really... See, we got to travel back then. Did you begin to miss that in the later years now, not being physically in the stadium and doing it off monitors? Because it's all different business when you're doing it off a monitor as opposed to being live at a game.
It is. It's completely different. Yeah, there's a lot of the things that I miss about travel. I don't miss being away from home as much. That's nice. But we were traveling regularly, and you were accumulating lots of frequent flyer miles and car rental and hotel points, you know, and those kinds of things. So there were occasions when, you know, I was able to take the family with me, and we turned a trip into a vacation. So those kinds of things were nice. It's a different world, and from a broadcaster standpoint, you know, it's a completely different craft now because you're in a studio. Some are small as a large closet. Others are more formidable, but – you're not there, you're reliant not only on the feed you receive from the stadium, but the shots that they call. And I remember we were playing the Galaxy when Beckham was going to come back from his injury, and the game against Columbus was he was expected to return that night, and like every 5 minutes they were cutting to him on the bench. Now, that was for an L.A. broadcast, while we were all excited to see David Beckham play. We didn't need to see him. We all know he's a handsome guy. We didn't need to see him every 5 minutes until he finally got on the field. So, yeah, it's different, and there's nothing like being in a stadium with a crowd, that's for sure. We were out in L.A. It was a 4th of July game, and there was about 70,000 people at the game, but I got there, and I went to the press elevator that you're familiar with, and they wouldn't let me on, and the security guy there just decided that my credential wasn't valid and would not let me on the elevator and would not radio for anybody, would not go ask anybody. He just stood there. And it just went on for about 45 minutes, and he wouldn't let me in until finally somebody happened to come by that I grabbed that was able to get us the support. So, that was a little bit.
And you had a suit and tie on, I'm sure, right?
Oh, probably? Yeah, and I had my league credential. Yeah. He just didn't think it looked right, and that was that. So,
we've had a few of those. Hey, here's something I really I did read an article. And I thought this was pretty amazing from the Columbus Crew organization and Tim Bezbachenko. He said basically he made it clear that a door would always be open for Dwight Burgess with the Crew and that he was much of an alumnus as former players. That's pretty incredible. That is some love from your organization to Dwight Burgess for his commitment and consistency for the Columbus Crew.
Well, it certainly is. And, this was just a labor of love for me, something that I enjoy doing. The fact that I also got paid to do it was a bonus. It becomes a business. It's a profession. That was part of the conversation we had after last season when I knew I had to slow down. And it's not just for me, and it's also what's right for the organization. But they did a recognition ceremony at the home opener. And there's a presentation on the field, and the knees were a little weak, and the supporter section started chanting, and some tears, and those kinds of things. So I remain hopeful that down the road that there may be some opportunities that reemerge. But for now, I'm incredibly grateful for 24 years, the people I've gotten to know, the people that I work for, and the fact that they think highly enough of. The work that I did over those years is a pretty special connection.
Boy, that's tremendous testimony, I'll tell you, from the Crew. Talking to Dwight Burgess, 24 years a commentator, I want to take you into aspiring commentators because I'm sure you get a lot of connection from young aspiring commentators, much like I do. And I'm sure you're willing to share information with them and help them. What would be some of the things that you would tell and really point out that's important to young aspiring broadcasters?
The first thing I always tell them when I'm asked is don't ever think you're too good, you're too big, you're too anything for any job. If you're offered an opportunity, that means a decision maker or a collection of people making a decision think highly of you, highly enough of you at that point in time in that place where they think that you're the best person to represent them in this very public fashion. So don't ever think that you're better than, that you're above, or that any particular role or job is beneath you. And that's simply respect for the profession and those that you work with. And then the other part of it is, because everybody has their own take on how the actual broadcasts work, but particularly on the television side, it's an appreciation for an understanding that there is this massive crew that is working. And while you get to be the face on the screen, you get to be the voice that people hear, if all of those other people aren't happy and able to effectively do their jobs, then you're not going to be able to do yours. So always remember that you're just one part of a machine. So I think being respectful, being humble, Glenn, these are qualities that I was raised with. And I think if you treat people properly and you do good work, that there's always going to be opportunities, particularly in today's day and age where almost everything sports-wise seems to be broadcast.
Yeah, no question about it. I love you honoring all the others, producers, directors, guys that pull cable, cameramen, I mean, stage managers, it goes on and on. And that was the big shock for me once I got into the business, was just understanding how many other people were a part of a broadcast. And it took a couple of years to finally put it all together in your head. It just can't happen right away. And humility and respecting everybody is a big piece of it. Your most memorable goal call, for whatever the reason Dwight Burgess wants it to be?
Well, that would have to be Frankie Hadick's header to seal MLS Cup in 2008. So the first few years, most of the franchises in the league didn't do a lot of television. It was very sporadic. So I was predominantly the radio guy. And then a few years in, when that began to transition, moved to the television side, then there was a new radio presence. Obviously, MLS Cup was on national television, so there was no local broadcast other than on the radio. So I was invited to sit in on the radio broadcast. And then with about 10, 12 minutes left in the game, Columbus up a goal at the point in time, the play-by-play guy turned to me and said, you know, you've earned the right, whatever his exact words were, but, you know, you've earned this, you take us home, which was an incredibly gracious, offer. And then to be able to call that goal in a championship season, and of course that's a connection that's particularly unique now with Siggy's passing. So, there's so many tremendous moments and so many stories as I think about writing a book tentatively titled The Voices in My Head, to reflect all the other people that we work with and producers and directors and, those kinds of things and the types of experience that you've had. It's more than any one person, you know, certainly deserves. But, as I said, Tim Bezbachenko, they're my memories and I'm keeping them.
Dwight, this has been a tremendous interview. Your passion, your love of the game, your commitment to the game, your expertise in the game, all to be honored. Thank you so much for coming on tonight and sharing these two segments with us. These are great. I will talk to you down the road.
My pleasure. All the best to you.
All right. That's Dwight Burgess. Thanks. 24 years, Columbus Crew, Wittenberg University coach. Some great reminiscing there with him. That's a great way to end the show tonight. Thank you all for tuning in tonight. By the way, The English Game, I recommend it. It's a great miniseries. It's a great watch. The acting is excellent. It tells basically the story of the invention of football, and it takes you through the FA Cup, how the game became a game for all and not just the aristocracy. It's 85% accurate, I think. There's a lot of accuracy in this thing. Some tremendous acting. Edward Hallcroft, Kevin Guthrie, Charlotte Hope. Unbelievable series. I hope you watch it, because you can watch it with the wife or the girlfriend, too, because it is a good blend. It's not just all soccer. It's going to do it tonight. Tyler Scott in for Andrew Carlson. Victor Ariza, I appreciate him popping on the show as well. Hugh O'Connor, 7620 Katy Freeway. Our friends out there, hang in there. All of you, hang in there. Let's get through this. Until next week, I'm Glenn Davis. Good night.
To call into the HR&P listener line, dial 713-780-ESPN.
Dial the phone.
Looking to outsource your company's HR and payroll? Get the top initiative and smart solutions with HRP.net.